Good morning. Today's daf in Gittin is Nun Aleph. We find ourselves on Nun Amud Beis. We're going to be starting today with the Ein Motzil Nachilas Peres. We're up to the next takana here in the Mishnah. We are in the fifth parak of the Masechta. The Mishnah, the opening Mishnah of this parak, gave us numerous takanas, eight takanas in total. The Chachamim are Masakin, various acts of protection, protecting consumers, and various other forms of takanas that were instituted. We are now up to the takana of when coming and taking for Achilas Peros. The case of Achilas Peros, admittedly, is a complicated case. So we are going to just quickly go over the case, and then obviously we're going to get into the Gemara. What happened was is that someone stole my property. Stealing a property is not easy. There is a discussion, a major discussion in Baba Kama, the Gemara Sukkah as well, the third parak, of whether or not Karkin exels and an exels, but short of that, however, that is not relevant to our discussion over here. Someone kicked me out of my property, and then what did he do? He sold my property. So obviously that's not a sale. It doesn't register as a sale. He had no right to sell my property, but he did. And now, the person who purchased the property had no idea of the history of the property. He didn't do due diligence. Okay, which in of itself, by the way, is interesting, but whatever the case is, he didn't do his due diligence, and now what's going to happen is that now I'm going to have enough political clout, enough legal standing, whatever the case is, I'm now going to go back and I'm going to reclaim my property from the person who purchased it. Okay, so far already it's a complicated story, but it gets a little bit more complicated. And now what happens is that lokeach, that purchaser, is going to go back to the mocher. I already said this yesterday, but I'll say it again today. Good luck to him. In other words, the guy that he bought it from is a thief. In other words, I'm saying it literally. He's a thief, and the chances of him getting any kind of compensation back is going to be a little bit challenging and difficult. But nevertheless, when the land was sold to him, it was sold to him by achrayus. It was sold to him with a guarantee. And that means to say that any of the assets of the mocher is in fact going to be encumbered against that sale. So that means to say that when in fact the Goslin sold the property, all of the Goslin's assets are there to guarantee the sale. Now that means that in turn, if the Goslin goes ahead and sells off any of those properties now are encumbered, the buyer's got a lien on those properties, and he can go ahead, exercise that lien, and go and take those properties even though they were sold to other people in order to satisfy the obligation that's owed to him. Okay, and right now, if you're following, great. And I apologize if you're not following, and I know this is a little bit complicated. And now the discussion is as follows. We learned in the Mishnah that if in the event that the buyer of the property not only is demanding a refund on the property, but I laid out money for that property. I invested into that property. Right, I went to Home Depot. I bought fertilizer. Right, and not only that, there was produce growing on that property. Think about all the invested money I put into that property. Think about the pears that are taken away. I'm entitled to a refund of that as well. Now he is entitled to a refund because obviously he wouldn't have gone to Home Depot. He wouldn't have bought fertilizer had he not had a property. So he is entitled to a refund for that. But for those costs, for those receipts, he cannot go after Nechasim Meshubadim. He can only go after Nechasim Benecharin. That's what we learned in the Mishnah. Meaning, I know, by the way, it sounds a little bit funny that we're making a takana for this scenario, right? In order to get to this scenario, that's a lot of steps to get here, but nevertheless, the takana was made so that the, now, by the way, who are we protecting over here? We're protecting buyers. Meaning other buyers who bought from the Goslin. So in other words, what they could do and they need to do is that they need to do due diligence to make sure that when they buy properties, those properties have to be free and clear. In other words, there has to be clear title on those properties. So over there, if there were previous sales that were done, so those are things which are documented, and I'm kind of giving away some of the upcoming Gemara. So those things are documented, and they can do their due diligence and research and make sure if in fact there were previous sales that were done, and those sales were done by achrayus, so they can and should protect themselves against that. But if we're talking about now variable costs of fertilizer and things like that, in other words, the buyers can't go ahead and research, you know, what other costs went into the property. So this is all really buyer protection. meaning these tikkunos that we're discussing over the course of today, it's most of today's daf, is all really for the purposes of buyer protection. With that stated, let's go to the Gemara. Amos il nachilas peres my taima. So amru lamar ish lakish lafisha in ksuvim. So number one, the Gemara says is that it's not written. Meaning as opposed to the sale of properties. So sales of properties are contracted. You have witnesses signing on the bottom. That's kasuv. Due diligence can go ahead and through discovery we can learn about sales that were done historically. But if we're talking about yitzias, if we're talking about invested money, if we're talking about payros, so these are things which are not written down, and so therefore you can't expect previous buyers to have learned about it. So the Amalei Rabbi Abba Le'ula v'hamazanisha v'abanos dekaman dekzivadami v'ktani en motziem. So the Gemara says, what about mazanisha v'abanos? A husband is obligated to support not only his wife, but also his daughters as well. And the commandic sivedami now is as if it's written down, meaning the fact that he has to support his wife, or when I say he, by the way, it also is his estate. The fact that he has to support his wife, the fact that he has to support his daughters, so that's written down. Now, where is it written down? In the ksuva. And even if you don't have a ksuva, it's an ibezin, it's commandic ksuvim dami. It's like it's written down, and v'ktani emotzin. And meanwhile, also when it comes to the support for the for the widow and the support for the daughters. So the estate is obligated. Although they're obligated, the widow and the daughters don't have a lien against those obligations. They can't go after people who have purchased properties from the estate. So the Gemara says, Amar lei, hasam ikarachi, itkun ksuvim hein, itzah benichor mein, ksuvim hein, itzah meshubadim. So the Gemara says, yeah, but that's an exceptional case, because when it comes to the Mazon Isha and the Mazon Banos, even though, yes, it's true, it's written, but in other words, but that's part of the contractual agreement. Meaning the Tanai Ksuvim is that they are going to get supported, but only from Bnei Chorim, not from Mishubadim. V'chein Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yochanan Lafi Shein Ksuvim. And now we're just going to do the same thing again. We're just quoting other Amoraim who are all of the position. Why is it that when the buyer has the land taken away from the nigzal, and now he's collecting from the seller, and he wants to get not only a refund on the purchase price, but he also wants to get back his investments and the payros. Why is it that he cannot collect for the investments and payros, for all the receipts on the property? Why can't he collect from Mishubadim? Why doesn't he have a lien against those obligations? And right now the Gemara's answer is very simple, because they were not written down. In other words, there's no paper to follow. There's no title to actually follow. And so therefore, we want to protect buyers. So the Gemara says, and Rabbi Yochanan says the same thing. And again, the same question is posed based on support to the widow and support to the daughters, where there they don't have a lien against those obligations. That's just simply part of the Tanai Ksuva. Okay, so what do we have right now? We have approach number one. Why can the buyer not demand a refund on Yitzios, on Peros? And the answer is because they were not contracted. They're not written into the contract. So Rabbi Chanina Amar Lefisha in Ketuvim. Rabbi Chanina now is going to give an alternative explanation. It's not because it's not written, but rather it's because it's not fixed. It's a variable. Meaning when you buy property, so how much is the purchase price of the property? It's a fixed amount. In other words, we know exactly how much it is. It's whatever they agree to, but it's a katsuv. But when we're talking about now, I want to improve the property, and now I'm going to go out there and buy, I'm going to buy product in order to improve the property. So that's eino katsuv, and so therefore you cannot create a lien on something which is a variable. So he buy the Rabbi Chanina katsuv ksuvim bayi, Odilma katsuv alfa pishen ksuvim. And Rabbi Chanina now is adding a point, or he's just saying, no, my point is all you need. Meaning, is it that Rabbi Chanina demands that in order for there to be a lien against an obligation, it has to both be where it was contracted, it was written, and on top of that also has to be a fixed cost? Or is it just simply the fixed cost being the only thing that becomes significant? So, Tashma, Ditmar, Mishamez, Vinech, Shnei Banos. Uvein, v'kadma rishon, v'not least in nechosim. V'lo yispik ashniya ligvos hashem eis haben. So Amr Rav Yochanan Shnia Vitra v'Amr le Rabbi Chanina. Wait 1 second before I get to Rabbi Chanina. So over here, what happens is as follows. First of all, everyone here knows that there's an ancient minug that what the father does is that he gives a dowry to his daughter when she gets married. So throughout the Gemara, this is what's called parnasa. Okay, parnasa generally speaking means support, but over here parnasa has a very halachic legal definition. Which is that Isur Nechasim, 10% of your estate is going to go to your daughter as basically a kickstart for her future life. Good. So this is what's called Parnasa. Now, the following case comes up. A person dies. He left two daughters and he left a son as well. Okay, so now, allocation distribution of his estate is going to go as follows. Each one of the daughters is going to be receiving 10%. That's Isur Nechasim. And the son's going to be receiving Beirusha, the remainder of the estate, 80%, right? If my math is good today. So what happened was, V'kadma Rishona, V'nat Lisa Nechasim. So the first daughter took her 10%, and she got married, like she's entitled to do. The second daughter was also ready to do that, but the son died. The son died now, leaving the estate to... Now, who's going to get the estate? The answer is very simple. The two daughters now are going to be dividing the entire balance of the estate. So, again, already 10% went to the first daughter because she got married already. And now the remainder, 90%, is going to be distributed amongst the two girls. So now the unmarried daughter, the yet-to-be-married daughter, says to the married daughter, can we just wait for a moment? Let's think about this. You already got 10% of the dowry, and now we're going to do a distribution of the remainder of the estate. So that means that you're going to get 45, I'm going to get 45. Wait 1 second. You already got 10% of the estate. So in other words, so if my math is correct, you're going to be receiving 55, and I'm receiving 45, and zelo fair. In other words, that's ridiculous. Well, here's what should happen. In other words, I'm going to get married. Give me the 10% of the estate for my parnasa, for my dowry. And then what we'll do is then we'll take the balance of the estate now and we're going to divide it. And that's fair. So that's the claim that the second daughter is making to the first daughter. So I'm Rav Yochanan Shnia Vitra. So Rav Yochanan said, okay, it's unfortunate, but you know, sometimes those are the breaks. And Rav Yochanan said that the second daughter, it says she's not going to get her dowry. She was mevater. And so therefore, what's going to happen is that she'll just simply get 45% of the estate. And it's sure the other daughter will get 55%. That's Rav Yochanan. And Amar le Rabbi Chanina. Now, here's what we have to listen carefully to now. Because what we're hearing now is Rabbi Chanina in his response. So Gedol Mizu Amru, so Rabbi Chanina says, Motzil Parnasa, Vein Motzil Mezonos, Ve'at Amar Shnia Vitra. Meaning, when you're talking about parnasa, meaning this 10% dowry that goes to the daughters, it's not just an ancient minug. In other words, it's an expectation. Excuse me. It's an expectation. In fact, not only is it an expectation, the daughters have a lien against this obligation. If the estate decides to go ahead and start selling off parts of the estate to others, the daughters can now go to the buyers and demand their parnasa. This 10%. So Rabbi Chanina says to Rabbi Yochanan, I can't comprehend your position. You're telling me that the second daughter was just simply mevater her parnasa? She just simply, she relenquished it? The daughters have a lien against that parnasa, against outside buyers. It simply can't be that the second daughter is just mevater that parnasa. So the Gemara says, fine. Now, I'm sorry, before we get to the next point of the Gemara, so what are we hearing? We're hearing so clearly that Rabbi Chanina, aside from arguing with Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chanina says that there is a shibud on Parnasa. That's what we're hearing, very clearly. Now, for Rabbi Chanina, what do I need in order for there to be a lien? So it certainly has to be kitsuvim. It has to be a fixed amount. The question on the table is, does it also have to be kasuf? And the Gemara now is litigating that very point. So when it comes to parnasa, so is it fixed? Sure, it's fixed. Now, I say it's fixed, by the way. It's a percentage, But okay, but a fixed percentage. Okay. And the and is it written down? So the Gemara right now is assuming it was not written down. And vekamotzia. And yet, according to Rabbi Chanina, you have a lien. And you could be motzi. So the Gemara says, okay, Shani Parnasa came into Islay, Kala Kaman Diksive Dame. So the Gemara says, okay, what we'll argue is the following, and that really it's written down. Now it's not contractual. It's not written down like that kind of written down. But in other words, but what does writing down mean? Writing down basically means now it's public information. Meaning when you do a title search, so the significance of having contracts and things written down is that with a title search and with due diligence, you can go ahead and you can discover. If something is not written down, so then it's undiscoverable. So over here, what the Gemara is arguing is that Parnasa, it's kikus of dummy. Everybody knows he's got daughters, and everybody knows the daughters are going to get married, and everybody knows they're going to get 10%. So this is something which is discoverable. It's kikus of dummy. Okay. Mesiv Ravuna Bar Manoach, Mesu Benoseim, I'm sorry. Mesu, Benosan is on his Menachas Menachorim, Vehi, Nizon is Menachas Meshubadim, Mishi Kabalzchov. Okay, so over here, what are we doing? We're going over it's a Mishnah? Okay, anyway. What we're going over here is the following, and that is that a guy got married and got married again, and got married even a third time, and now, let's do that again. I started the story wrong. Okay, a woman got married. She had a daughter. She gets married a second time, does she get married even a third time? Anyway, yeah, let's say yes. Okay, and with each new marriage, so basically, she says to her future husband, "Look, here's the story. Right, not only do you get me as a wife, but in other words, but bonus, right? I'm coming in with a daughter, and my daughter's young." Can we make an agreement right now that you're going to support my daughter for 5 years? And so they make a prenuptial agreement. This is not a ksuva. In other words, when a man marries a woman, he doesn't have to support his daughters, but he agrees to do so. So now he accepts upon himself this extra obligation to not only support his wife, which is a ksuva obligation, but also to support his stepdaughter as well. 5 year contract. Okay, the 5 year agreement. And not only that, but in other words, but this marriage terminates and she does it again. She marries another guy and the second guy also makes now a 5 year commitment to do so. All right. So to support his stepdaughter. Okay. So here's the story now. So the latest husband is now, I'm sorry. So now the stepdaughter is going to have two streams of revenue because mom got married so many times. So she's going to be receiving now, she's going to be receiving support from the previous estate and this estate as well. And because again, it's not a ksuva obligation, it was an extra obligation that were made by the husbands. So therefore, this obligation is solid. So rock solid that she even has a lien against that obligation. These were contracted obligations that she receives. And oddly enough, and that's what the Mishnah here is pointing to, is that his own biological daughters of the latest husband, so they're going to be receiving support, obviously. But in other words, but that's Mazon Banos. Mazon Banos is only coming from Bnei Chorin. They don't have a lien towards that obligation. And oddly enough, and it's going to be strange, and I'm sure it's going to create tension in the home, the stepdaughters are not only entitled to be supported, but they even have a lien against that obligation. Okay, that's the case the Mishnah is describing. So and it says it very succinctly. So benosem nizonus menachas menecharim vehi menachas meshubadim nishika balaschov. So she is like a balaschov, and as a result of that, she is going to be receiving support. Not only receiving support, but she has a lien against that obligation. So the Gemara now wants to know. Meaning, so what's problematic over here? So so as long as it's a fixed amount, and the. And even though, now where's the contract for this? The Gemara right now is assuming that there's no contract. And if that's true, so what do we see over here? You see over here, so as long as it's a fixed amount, even though there's no contract, that's sufficient. The Gemara says, Gemara's response is that in this situation, there was a formal kinyan that was done. The Gemara says, well, if there was a kinyan, So why can't we also say that there was a kinyan for his own daughters? Okay. Now, in a moment, the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. You made a kinyan with your own daughters that you're going to support them. Okay? When he got married, his daughters were not yet in this world. They're going to come as a result of the marriage. But it is a funny suggestion the Gemara just made, that he made a kinyan with his daughters, that he's going to support them. So the Gemara says, he made a kinyan for his stepdaughter, but not for his own daughter. My Pascha, the Gemara says, well, that seems to be arbitrary. The Gemara says, no, Basisha Davi Bishas Kinyan, so Mahanlai Kinyan. Bita Dalahavi Bishas Kinyan, La Mahanlai Kinyan. So the Gemara now makes the point, which I mentioned earlier, is an obvious point, but now the Gemara is articulating. Do you know why he made a kinyan with his stepdaughter? Because when he married his wife and she was previously married, she previously had children, she previously had daughters. So in other words, so knew the stepdaughter is there. So fine, so at that marriage, so now he's going to agree, and not just agree, but make a kinyan with his wife that, yes, I'm supporting you, but that's a ksuva obligation. I'll support your daughter, five year term, and she's there, and they're going to make a kinyan. But when it comes to his own biological daughters, so they're not there at the time of marriage, by definition. So the Gemara says, Milos Kinan, Dahapatavai Bishas Kinyan Vechidami, Dikashava Hadra. So the Gemara says, okay, I understand that, but let's be a little bit creative. In other words, his own daughters can be there at the marriage. Okay, now it's kind of funny, by the way. If I were going to be creative, I don't want to be, but if I were going to be creative, I would simply say that he had the girls before they got married, in other words, out of wedlock, and then they decided to get married. Okay, but Gemara is going to do a little bit better than I did it, a lot better than I did it, and the Gemara is going to come up with a scenario in which he married his wife, they had children, they got divorced, and he decided, you know what, let's try this again. And he was machzer grushaso. And again, she obviously she didn't get married in the interim. And he was machzer grushaso. And now she's coming into the marriage. And look, let's try this again. Sure, no problem at all. Oh, but wait. In other words, but what about our daughters? Okay, what do you mean, what about our daughters? I'm going to support the daughters. No, she says, let's make a kinyan that you're going to support the daughters. So it is possible, albeit it's unlikely, it's unusual. It is possible for not only his stepdaughter to be there at the time of marriage, but it's also possible for his daughters to be there as well. So Ella Bita de Naibesin Kaachla La Mahanale Kinyan, Basisha de la bin Naibesin Kaachla Mahanale Kinyan. So the Gemara says, okay, but the distinction is going to be much more fundamental. When you have a stepdaughter, so what's your starting point? Are you obligated to support her? The answer is no. Make her, then you're not obligated to support her. And so therefore, when you make a contractual agreement and you make a kinyan, so then it's going to be binding. Not only is it going to be binding, but it's also going to be a shibud. In other words, shavalin against that. But when it comes to his own biological daughters, so already that's built into the ksuva. So in other words, there's no need to make an extra contractual obligation. And so the Gemara says, therefore, it's different. V'chimei gergara, the Gemara says, okay, I hear you, and it is a fundamental distinction, but wait. In other words, even though the ksuva already demands that you go ahead and you support your own biological daughters, but if you make a kinyan on top of that, overlapping the ksuva obligation, you want to tell me that the kinyan is not going to have any teeth to it whatsoever? So the Gemara says, well, elabito came into b'nai besin ka'achla eimat srare atfisa. So the Gemara says like this, we're going to make another basic distinction. When it comes to your stepdaughter, where again, you are not obligated at all to support your stepdaughter. You made an extra contractual obligation to support her. So there it's going to be, not only is it going to be binding, you made a kinyan, but on top of that, she has a shibud against that obligation. And she can go ahead now and, mind you, in other words, I'm sure we're all following, but now the stepdaughter, after the death of her stepfather, can go ahead and not only go to the estate and say to the estate, you have to support me. That's a no-brainer. Meaning that she's holding an account receivable against that obligation. It's a 5-year term obligation. But not only that, but if the estate goes ahead and sells properties, she can even go after the buyers for that. Okay. That's a lot. However, when it comes to his own biological daughter, so she does not, they don't have liens against that. Why not? Because look, it's daddy. Right? As opposed to the stepfather. Over here, it's daddy. And over here, in other words, dad knows he has to support his daughters, but not only does he know it, In other words, I'm going to say a little bit rough. He wants to support his daughters, and he wants them to have. And so as he's now, let's say he knows he's approaching death, and he's a little bit worried that the kids are not going to take care, his boys are not going to be taking care of the girls and provide for them, right? In other words, even though they're bound to do so, they're obligated to do so. So what daddy's going to do is he's going to call the girls into his office and he's going to say, hey, look, here's what we're going to do. Meaning the estate has to support you, but you know what I'm going to do right now? I'm going to take a little bit of right now off, and I'm just going to give it to you, right? Srare atfisa. He's going to give to his daughters, and because of that concern, that's what dad did for his own daughters, so therefore what the Chachamim said is, you know what? We're not going to let them go after buyers. In other words, we have a legitimate concern that maybe the daughters already got payment, and so therefore we're not going to allow the daughters to go after the buyer. Okay. We really, in other words, I know it's a difficult daf today, it's a little bit of a complicated daf, but we really only litigated one single point. And that is the following, that when it comes to you demanding a refund on the purchase price of the property, you are totally entitled to do so. And not only that, but the sale was done contractually, it was written, and obviously it was a fixed cost, and therefore what you're allowed to do is not only get a refund, but get a refund even from the lekuchos. Buyers who bought from your seller, so you can go ahead and go after them as well. However, when it comes to receipts, you invested into the property, there are payers of the property, so you can get refunded for that, but you don't have a lien against that. And why don't you have a lien against that? So right now we are entertaining two different svaras of the Gemara. One is because it's not written down. It's eino katsuv. And two, it's because it's eino katsuv. It's not fixed. And all we're trying to ascertain is the Rebbe Chanina, who offered the latter explanation, is it katsuv and katsuv, or is it just katsuv by itself? That's all we've been doing this morning. I admit, it's a little bit challenging, but that's all we've been doing. So Tashma, the Gemara says, okay, so let's see. We are on Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, we're halfway down in the Amud. I'm Rebbe Nasan, Eim Asai. Rabbi Nassim introduces the following. Okay, again, same storyline, right? Land was stolen. The thief went ahead and sold the land, and now after the sale was done to the buyer, and let's call the buyer a Rishon. So the first buyer. So now what happens is that the land is taken away correctly. In other words, rightfully. In other words, the original owner, the Marakama, now says, look, I'm really sorry, but that land belongs to me and it was stolen from me and it's my land. And obviously you need proof, but in other words, then he takes back the land. And now the buyer goes ahead and now is demanding a refund from the seller. Not only demanding, but entitled to a refund from the seller. So now we know that refund is not only, obviously he's entitled to it, but on top of that also, because the land was sold by achrayus, so therefore he's got to lean on that refund. Which means now that any properties that the seller had are going to be encumbered, they're going to be mortgaged against that obligation. Fine, that's all a given. We're also learning in the course of today's daf, that if there are any receipts and investments that he put into the property, so he can get refunded as well, but no lien against that. Okay, so far so good. All I did is just recap our basic point that we made today. Now Rabbi Nassim introduces the following. Let's say that he went to Lowe's, he went to Home Depot, right? I don't want to take a side on which one is better. And he went ahead and he purchased fertilizer and whatever he purchased in order to invest into the property. And now he's got those receipts. According to Rabbi Nassan, if those receipts predate any selling of any property of the seller, so then according to Rabbi Nassan, you are allowed to go after the buyers. Okay? So in other words, when you show your Home Depot receipts now to the seller and say, hey, look, in other words, not only are you refunding me on the purchase price, but you're also going to refund me on these receipts as well. According to Rabbi Nassan, if any sale of any property is done subsequent to the receipts, he can go ahead and exercise a lien even on the receipts as well, according to Rabbi Nassan. So that's what we just learned together. So Rabbi Nassan Amar, Amos, I'm just going to read it again. So go over and So over here, so according to Rabbi Nassan, what is the single and only variable that we need? And that is priority, which came first. So the Gemara says Tanaihi. So the Gemara says, okay, it's a machlokas Tanaim. So over here in this brisa that we just cited, so why do you not have a lien against these outstanding obligations? Because they're not contracted, they were not written. And the Amar of Yosef v'chimatikin olam yesh bezu v'alo in kitzuvim. Rav Yosef says, I don't need an extra takana. In other words, it already is built into the basic laws of where there is a shibud and where there isn't a shibud. Where is there a shibud? When it's a fixed cost. When is there no shibud? When it's a variable. And so over here, you're talking about investment, money that you laid out for improvements. That's a variable. It's not a fixed. Rabbi Yossi says to the Tanakama, I don't need your extra takana. There is no shibud when it's a variable and it's not a fixed. So the haloin ketuvim, okay. And so therefore, all we're in defense of Rabbi Chanina, which is all we did this morning, all we're going to say over here is that Rabbi Chanina is siding with Rabbi Yossi, meaning by virtue of the fact that it's not fixed, but rather it's a variable. That's why there's no shibud on that. Okay. Good. Adkan, that takes us to the end of the first half of today's daf. Okay, so a detailed discussion regarding when is there a lien and when is there no lien. There's going to be a lien on things that are contracted and things that are fixed. And if it's not contracted and it's not fixed, so there's not going to be a lien. And then a discussion, a technical discussion in terms of whether they're both necessary components in order for there to not to be a lien, or just one of the two is sufficient. Okay. Hamotzi mitzia lo yishava. We're up to the next takana of the Mishnah. And that is that when you return a lost item and the guy is so grateful and then he opens up his wallet and then he sees that some of the money is missing and he says, hey, could you do me a big favor? Right? I'm sure you're a great guy. But there is some money missing. In other words, can you not only explain why there's money missing, but can we go to court together and can you make a shmua? Because again, it's almost like a case. It's not almost. It's a case of mode b'miksas, and so the can you make a shmua about the remaining money? And now the finder is going to say to himself, you know what? This will be officially the last time I return a lost item. I return a lost item, and now we're going to court. And now I'm making a shmua. Thank you, but no, thank you. I'm not going to do it again. And so therefore, what the chachamim realized and recognized is, you know what? We want to encourage people to return lost items. So we're going to waive any shvur that they're going to need to make in order to incentivize and motivate people to return lost items. Another takana that we learned in our Mishnah. The Gemara discusses. Hamotz mitzia lo yishava. Amar Rabbi Yitzchak. So the shnei kisim kshurim matzasali. So vahala omer lo matzasi ela echad nishba. Okay, so let's say a person lost two wallets, and he claims that the two wallets were tied together. And now somebody was nice enough, kind enough to return the wallets, but he didn't return wallets, he just returned one. And now the owner says, look, the two of them were tied together. And the finder says, I'm sorry, I only found one. So under those circumstances, according to Rabbi Yitzchak, you make a shvua. As opposed to where it's a pair of oxen, where at least the owner is arguing that there were two tied together, and the finder says, I don't know what you're talking about, I only found one. So in the former case, you have to make a shvua, meaning that's a case of Oda B'miksas. In the latter case, you don't have to make a shvua. Now my time of the Gemara says, yeah, but let me understand, why should there be a distinction? So shvar menatzei me'adadei kisin, Well, the wallets are inanimate objects, and therefore, if the owner's claim is that the two wallets were tied together, in other words, what happened? In other words, why isn't there a second wallet there? As opposed to oxen. Oxen obviously are animals, live animals. And so livestock are moving around all the time, and it could very well be that they were tied together, but it could also be very plausible that they decoupled, because we're talking about livestock. So the... So, on the other hand, so the person who lost it said that I had two, and the other one says, yes, I know I found two, and I already returned one of them to you, so this is now going to be a case of Moda Bimixas. Okay, Rav Yitzhak, Leislei. And the Gemara says, now, of course, this entire discussion is unbelievably strange, because Rav Yitzchak is basically talking about various circumstances where the finder is going to have to make a shvuah, as opposed to where he's not. Animate objects versus inanimate objects. The Gemara says, what's happening over here? In our Mishnah, we learned that takana derabanan, tikkun olam, that a finder does not have to make a shvuah. He's going to be protected, and any shvuah that would be necessary, he's going to be waived. We want to encourage people to return items. What is happening over here? Rabbi Yitzchak is saying that under certain circumstances, the finder is going to have to go to court and make a shvuah. So,
isn't he considered to be a shomer in a way? So, a shomer has to make a shvuah.
The shomer is going to have to make a shvuah, but the depends on the shomer and depends on what happened. And yes, but over here, more than that. In other words, the finder is going to be is going to have a pass from any kind of shvuah whatsoever. Shvuah moda b'mikzah, shvuah shomrim. In other words, he will be indemnified. So the Gemara says, "Who da'amar ki Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov?" So the Rabbi Yitzchak is holding Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov. D'tanya Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov omer pa'amim shadam nishba al tanas atzmo ketzad. So the Gemara brings out a machlokas between Rav Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim. I go to a person and I said, look, what your father did is that I had an outstanding debt with your father. I owed him 100, I already gave him 50. So this is Moda B'Mikzas, and so now, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, so okay, fine, that's very nice of you, but in other words, but you admitted to owing 100, and now, but in other words, you admitted the original, sorry, you admitted the original obligation was 100, and now you're saying, yeah, but 50 of it, I don't know. That's Moda B'Mikzas. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says you have to make a shvuah. And the Chachamim says this is what's called Hashavas Aveda. And the Gemara says, I want to understand this better. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Leisle Meshav Aveda Pater. Now, Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, wait one second, the Chachamim seem to be making an outstanding point. Over here, you're the one coming forward and saying, here's what happened, here's the history with your dad and me. In other words, if you didn't give him the history, he never would have known about it. It's basically a case of Hashavas Aveda. Effectively, what the Gemara is asking over here is, the Chachamim seem to be making an outstanding point. Had you not come forward and provided the information, the kid would have known about it. The kid would not have known about it. And you're over here now forwarding this information that you owe dad 100. And now let me give you a little more history.
There's no shitar publicized alone.
Okay, fine. So there, right, obviously over here there's no shtar. Had there been a shtar, so then I think would definitely be different. Anyway. So it's Meshav Aveda Pater. Amara Betoan Okatan. So Rav says that the case under review over here is where the son made a taina. He made a claim. So the Gemara says, Kat Midi Meshash Ezbe, Savatana, and Enish Banal Tainis Chereshot Vekatan. So the Gemara says, I'm so happy that the kid made a claim. Okay, the kid made a claim legally, that's nothing. Chereshot Vekatan, these children, and anyone who does not have their mental faculty, they make a taina, they make a claim. The claim has no legal bearing. So the Gemara says, my katan gadov, amai karele katan, delagabi mila daviv katanu. So the Gemara says, okay, well, let's clarify something. In other words, I know we said he's a katan, But he's not actually a minor. It just simply means that he is a, it's the son of the father. But he's an adult. We're calling him a katan just simply because he doesn't know all of the dealings and negotiations of his father. So, ihachi, tanis atzmo, tanis achirmo. So the Gemara says, okay. So what do you mean, tainas atzmo? Tainas acherim. So in other words, the tainas coming from the son, not from the principal. So tainas acherim v'odas atzmo. So the Gemara says, okay, it's a taina of the son. But in other words, but what happened over here is that the borrower fully admitted, yeah, you're right. Your father did lend me money, and I did owe him, and he did lend me 100. But okay, but again, as long as we're here, let me give you the rest of the story. I already paid him 50. So the Gemara says, "Kul tana sanami tana secher v'odas atzma ninu." So the Gemara says, "Okay, but you understand that modem and mixas, that's how it always works. Meaning, somebody else makes a tana, and what you did is you come clean, but you're coming clean on partial, not on the full." So ella b'derabba kamiflagi. So the Gemara says, finally, what we need to do is we need to wrap our heads around this machlokus. So the Gemara says, fine, we're going to wrap our head around the machlokus. They're arguing within Rabbah's explanation of modem and mixas. Amar Rabbah mimim amar Torah modem and mixas etani yishava. Chazak ein adam eispan of bifnei bachovo. So Rabbah's going to do something interesting, and that is he's going to give a psychological explanation in terms of why the Torah requires a shvua by modem and mixas. So this Gemara over here is fundamental. It comes up a number of places throughout Shas. Today's daf being one of the principal daf in that discuss it. And that is that Rabbah says, look, when you partially come clean on an obligation, so you have to make a shvud. You know why? Here's why. Number one, somebody comes to you and says you owe the money. What are you going to do? You're going to deny the obligation in total? No one has that kind of chutzpah. Now, when I say no one, of course, I'm not talking about nobody. Right? Baruch Hashem, there are people out there with a lot of chutzpah. But in other words, but we're going to talk about the average general degree of chutzpah people have. If I owe somebody money, and he was so nice to lend me the money, and what am I going to do? I'm going to deny it in total? Most people don't have that kind of chutzpah. Okay, so, Eina demez banda bifnei bachova, let's call that a chazaka. Okay? So the and uvikule by the ludele v'aydelo udele ishtemutehu de kamishamele savra ad havele zizze paranele. Okay. Now, so if you're not going to deny it, so in other words, so let's go in the other direction. So aren't you just simply going to admit? So the Gemara says, well, yes and no. In other words, right now you don't have the full amount to pay him. So here's your game plan. Okay. It may not be the best game plan, but here's your game plan. I'm not going to deny everything, but I'm also not going to admit to everything. I don't have it all right now. So what I'll do is I'll make a partial admission. And then what will that do is I'll buy time. And then at a later point in time, what I'll then do is that when I get into more money, I'll go back and I'll pay back the balance of my loan. So what the Torah basically understands human psychology and what the Torah now therefore says is, you know what, if you made a partial admission, we have really, really strong reason to suspect that you really do owe the whole thing. You know what? Make a shvua. And people are going to be scared to make a shvua, and they're going to, at that point in time, admit to owing the balance of the obligation. This is Rabbah's explanation of why it is the Torah requires a shvua by modem b'mixas. Now, v'amar rechmana rami shvua yilavei, ki echidulu delei b'kulei. And so the shvua of modem b'mixas is so that what you'll do is you'll come clean immediately. Now, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov sefer lo shtam bov lo shtam bivna ve'okach lav kemeshiv aveidu. Sorry, I skipped two important words. Ein omeiz ve'okach lav meshiv aveidu. So as far as Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov is concerned, so this idea that people don't have that kind of chutzpah. Now, if you're looking straight at the face of the person who lent you the money, so now, right, ein omeiz. No one's going to have that kind of chutzpah. For the person who lent you the money. But let's say he died. And now over here, it's the kid. So Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov will say, you're still going to have that strong feeling of indebtedness, of gratitude. Not only to the principal who lent you the money, but to his kid as well. It's his kid. And Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov will say that the modem b'mixas shvuah would be applicable, not only to the principal, but even his kid as well. And what the Chachamim will tell you is as follows. If we're talking about the person who actually lent me the money, I'm not going to be that chutzpahdik. I'm not going to tell him I owe you nothing. But if he died, and now we're up to the next generation. So what the Chachamim will tell you is that, look, he's not the one who lent me the money. Again, I understand it's the child of the one who was so good to me and so kind to me, but it wasn't him. He's not the one who lent me the money. And therefore the Chachamim would say, do you know what people will do? They're going to get the courage, and this is not good courage, but they're going to get the courage. They'll have courage enough to deny the whole thing to the son of the lender. And now that he's not denying the whole thing, now he's making a partial admission. We're no longer in the world in the parsha of Moed B'Mikzas. You would have denied everything. The fact that you go ahead and admit to owing part of the loan, so this now falls under the category of Hashavas Aveda. Because you just as well would have denied everything had you decided that you don't want to pay. Okay. And that's the machlokas between Rav Elazar ben Yaakov and the Chachamim. In other words, whether or not when the claim now is being made by the son, is this still falling under the category and under the guise of Moed B'Mikzas, that Rav Elazar ben Yaakov would argue yes or no. In other words, this no longer falls under the category of Moed B'Mikzas because we lost the entire psychological aspect of gratitude that you have, and therefore it's not Moed B'Mikzas. You would, in principle, deny everything, and therefore this falls more under the category of Hashavas Aveda. And that would be the Shita of the Chachamim. Okay, Adkan takes us literally to the end of today's daf. And tomorrow, Mir Tashem, we start with we start fresh. Quick recap. Okay, the first part of today's daf. When do you have a lien? When do you not have a lien? You will have a lien and be able to go ahead and go after properties that were sold when it's contractual and when it's fixed. And the big question of the first half of today's daf is, do I need both? Is one of those going to be sufficient? Okay, that was point number one of today's daf. Right? And really succinctly summarized, but that's not number one. And number two of today's daf is there's a takana that when you return a lost item, so you are not going to have to make a shvua, you're going to be indemnified, protected from having to make a shvua, because we want to incentivize people to return lost items. What if it's in the return of the lost item, we have claim counterclaim? Thank you very much, but there's money missing in my wallet, or alternatively, I lost two wallets and they were tied together, and meanwhile you're only coming back with one. Where's the other wallet? Does this fall under the category of Moed B'Mikzas? So does the return have to make a shvua? Rav Yitzchak says, well, we'll make a difference between adamant objects, inanimate objects. And the Gemara says, what is Rav Yitzchak talking about? We protected the returner to have to make any shvua whatsoever. That's what we learned in our Mishnah. So the Gemara says that what Rav Yitzchak's talking about is where you're not returning it to the principal, but you're returning it to the kid, and whether or not this falls under the category of Moed B'Mikzas, or whether this falls under the category of Hashavas Aveda. Okay.